Football Weekly Extra, that Chelsea Barca semi. Plump kids in tears, hysterical players, and more F words than Volume 6 of the Encyclopedia. Forget pro wrestling. This is entertainment. Behind the controversy, though, your pod asks, is Didier Drogba the angriest man ever in flip-flops? Did Abidal's red card leave Barcelona with just 11 men? And why did the Catalans manage less shots than Sean Ingle in a tequila bar? All those answers to come. Meanwhile, the other semi-final, majestic Man United, the emptying Emirates and Nicholas Bentner in his knickers. We look back on that game and forward to the final. And after all of that, if there's time, we check out the Championship playoffs. We have a look at what's going on around Europe and forward to the Premier League weekend and that big Newcastle Borough showdown on Monday night. All of that in Football Weekly Extra, plus, of course, your post. All right, then. Joining me on what I'm sure is going to prove a historic pod today is Barry Glendenning.
Hello, James.
Who's not had any breakfast, had you, Barry?
No.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what effect that has on your... Maybe like those pit bulls that are kept hungry before being unleashed on an unsuspecting podosphere. We shall see. John Ashton, breakfasted well, have you?
I did. I had a bacon sandwich on the way in, actually.
Great,
yeah.
Great news. And Kevin?
I am replete with toast and coffee and orange juice.
You're a wordsmith. Fantastic. No producer Pete today.
There he is.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah. Judas.
Producer Judas. John
Ashton. Pretending he couldn't be here, just chose not to.
Right. We've got producer Jason in today, who, of course, listeners will be familiar with from his work on the Top Film Weekly podcast. Another one of the Guardian's award-winning coterie of podcasts, because we picked up that Webby.
We did, yes.
Damn if we didn't. Yeah. Excellent. Producer Pete will be getting his in the Five-A-Side tournament, John. When's that happening?
It's the Sunday of Bank Holiday weekend at the end of this month.
Right.
Producer Pete's multimedia side.
Right.
Also featuring Simon Hattonston, I believe.
Oh.
They've not been drawn in the same group as the two sport teams.
Right. There are two sport teams?
Yeah, we've got a big squad of players, so right. Strength in depth.
Right, Sean Ingle in goal, I'm guessing, the octopus.
Sean's still a doubt. I'm not entirely really? Sure he might have other commitments, but I'm sort of coach and
you're
manager
and
captain,
has.
So I shall be
nice one, John.
Coordinating
and
things.
Can the general public go along and be part of this spectacle, throw coins, that kind of thing?
If they really, really want to, James. Yeah.
Right, where will it be then, John?
It's actually a leisure centre just off Old Street, which is called Finsbury Leisure Centre.
There you go. On Bank Holiday weekend.
Bank Holiday weekend, Sunday 10 till 5, come one, come all. Don't come at all, preferably.
I tell you what, that's quite an invitation, that. Quite an invitation.
Well, I was only provoked by you into giving an invitation. I don't know if it's a good idea to let the listeners come and see people who talk about football, just quite how bad they are at football.
I don't know. Are we going to sell tickets?
Well, that's a point, actually. There could be money to be made.
Mm. There could indeed. Money and football. Now, Chelsea-Barcelona. A hugely entertaining evening in front of the telly, or a disgrace to football? You decide. Were Chelsea right to complain? Did the right team win? So many questions. And how did John Terry reckon that they had five or six penalty claims waved away? Where do we begin with this, Barry Glendenning?
I suppose we begin at the start, the first leg, which many, many thousands of Chelsea fans appear to have completely forgotten about. They've all been the whinging of their players has been emulated only by the whinging of the fans, who have been complaining that Barcelona only got one goal, or only had one shot on goal last night, and they seem to have forgotten that Chelsea only had one shot on goal in the first leg. Barcelona had 70% possession again last night. They at least attempted to play football. And I was amused listening to, I immediately turned, like I'm sure many people did last night, turned to 6:06 on 5 Live, which was presented by celebrity Chelsea fan Tim Lovejoy, who completely lost the plot. He was complaining bitterly that Chelsea only have one way of playing, or Barcelona only have one way of playing, which, you know, is quite a good way, I think. And he was complaining that they're quite clearly a rubbish team, and it was the whinge of somebody who's only basing their judgment on the evidence of two games they've seen and somebody that never watches Spanish football.
I have to say, they were a huge disappointment. Do you not think, last night?
Last night.
Wednesday night?
Well, they went through. They were a disappointment. But, you know, Leo Messi, who people are saying have had a shocker, he set up the goal. I thought he played well. You only need one shot on goal if it goes in and the other team don't try to play. Yeah. Chelsea's cowardice has knocked them out of the the Champions
League. I thought
League.
They performed much better in this game than in the previous one. And whilst it was amusing to see Gus Hiddink, the man who went through to the semi-finals of the 2002 World Cup after two of the most bizarre refereeing performances for his South Korea side against Italy and Spain, talking now about possible conspiracy. Whilst that was bizarre, it is fair to say that it was a truly shocking performance by the referee, would you say, Kevin?
Well, yes. I mean, there's a lot of nonsense talked. I mean, he's actually had 21 Champions League matches. At what point do you get to be allowed to do a semi-final? Presumably, UEFA judged his moment had come. He had a poor game, but actually, just looking at things in the papers, for example, these various penalties, one Alves and Malouda, one photo gas can load up with one foot outside the area and one inside. That's quite tricky for a referee. I can see how that might be a close call.
Well, there were four. I mean,
I know. I've got them all here. Mm. Yes, I think...
So Malouda, first of all, should we have a quick straw poll on these? Was that a penalty?
I think it's a hard... Yes, but I think it's a hard call. I mean, right. It's on the line virtually. It's very tight.
He looked like he was standing inside the box.
As far as I can tell, the tussle started outside the box. If that happens, that's where the free kick should be. Yeah. So no, that should not have been a penalty.
Unless you play the advantage, then award the penalty once move continues, but it's debatable. I agree.
It looked to me like the foul took place inside the area, but I know that there was contact before they got in. But then you had Drogba falling over, which for me was a Drogba dive. And it is worth mentioning that Drogba is the man who, in 2006, admitted that he often dives for fun. So that's part of the problem.
But his shot was pulled. There's no question about it. You get a foul for that anywhere else in the pitch. So I don't know why it's not.
But it was some time after that he actually remembered to fall over.
It was. If you somebody pulls your jersey, it's a foul.
Well, yeah, but you very rarely see them given.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but it's a foul. It's fact, it should be given. It's a, right. You know, it's
the two handballs, though.
PK one, definitely.
Yeah.
And the other one, I think the ball's hammered in the ball.
If you get your arm up in the air when you're defending against that kind of...
But I wasn't surprised Refi didn't give it. I mean,
At that point.
I think refis often don't. You're right. I mean, if somebody's protecting their face, maybe the referee should give a foul, but... they tend not to. I think two of them were particularly strong.
And let's not forget that Barcelona had a stonewall or of a penalty turned down in the first leg as well.
Indeed. And also,
again, Chelsea
maybe
fans
had
appear to have forgotten. And right. Barcelona had a man sent off last night that should not have been sent
off. And Balak conceivably should have been sent off in the first leg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Alex.
Can we just pause to congratulate UEFA on the finesse of their conspiracy? I thought it was brilliant the way they arranged for Iniesta to score that goal and arranged for Drogba to miss his chances.
Well, it's
the things that Platini can do are just wonderful.
It is a point. It's a point that's been made that in terms of making sure Barcelona won, they did leave an awful lot to chance.
And sending off Abadaldus to throw you off the scent, that was a masterstroke too, wasn't it?
Indeed. So if they'd really wanted to make sure Barcelona win, maybe they should have sent off Dani Alves, who posters were pouring in with their complaints about Sid Lowe rating Dani Alves one of the best players in the world. 16Borough10 says, if Sid Lowe thinks Dani Alves is one of the best players in the world, I have to seriously question his football knowledge. Based on his performance tonight, he could have been Afonso Alves. Those are strong words. Strong words there. We'll get Sid's reaction to all of that in a second or two. A couple of other posts on this. Nick Perez making your point about Barcelona having a penalty turned down in the first leg, and Balak conceivably shouldn't have started the second leg either. V Cynical, has any team that has ever that has enjoyed over 60% of possession in both legs of a cup tie ever been considered fortunate to win before us? V Cynical. Hey Habib, Chelsea 1, Michel Platini 3. Well, there you go. It is a game that's polarised opinion. John?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has.
No, going back to the referee, I just thought from watching it in the pub last night, I just thought it was a classic bottle job from the guy, and that he was perfectly prepared to give loads of free kicks in neutral areas of the pitch, but wasn't prepared to give them in the key areas. And I sort of got the feeling that if the Abidal foul or non-foul on Anelka had been inside the area, he wouldn't have even given the penalty, never mind sent him off. I just thought that was that sort of thing.
Interesting. And Drogba?
I don't know. I mean, I can understand why the players are angry, but their behaviour is unacceptable. Drogba swearing down a TV camera. I'm not going to pretend to be outraged by it because I was pacing myself laughing when I saw it. But Drogba's just an embarrassment to himself. And he has a young son, and his son is going to see that and go, you know, what are you doing? You know, he just let himself down again. He spent half the game last night flat in his back with nothing wrong with him. There seems to be some talk that he managed to feign injury so well he actually ended up getting substituted when master tactician Gus Hiddink then brought on a central midfielder or a defensive midfielder to further park the bus against the 10 men of Barcelona while even though they were already a goal down. So you know, it's just a joke.
The funny thing about the Drogba thing was, I mean, he was limping, then he'd get furious when Heading took him off. Yeah. I'm only kidding, I'm not really injured. It's a hard, but Drogba's a nightmare for Chelsea in the sense that, you know, he threw away his chance of winning the European Cup last year with a stupid slap at Vidic and was unapologetic about it. And yet at the same time, he's easily the best centre forward. You know,
although he missed these two clear opportunities.
I mean, but he'd scored, what, like 12 in his past 15? I can't remember, 12 and 15 or something. I mean, if you get, it's probably too late now at the age of 31 to sort out the inside of his head, but I don't know how they would replace him.
Yeah. Right. Well, listen, let's get to Sid Lowe and the reaction from Spain. Here he is now, the Sidster. Right, what's the reaction in Spain?
Well, it sort of depends where you want that reaction to come from. Obviously, you can imagine Catalonia, everyone's absolutely delighted. I think most people in Madrid, in a media sense, and obviously there's a question mark about Real Madrid fans because the vast, vast majority of Real Madrid fans I've spoken to wanted Chelsea to win. But the reaction, even in Madrid, I think certainly from the media, is one of, all right, Barcelona diced with death, but they got what they deserved, because there's a feeling that there was only one side over 180 minutes that tried to play football.
All right, what about the referee? What did the Spanish say about the referee?
Well, there's a couple of quite nice lines in the Madrid press, and would you believe there's no lines at all in the Catalan press? It's quite fantastic. Pick up a copy of El Mundo Deportivo, the newspaper, as you well know, James, because you were sitting in front of a canal reading it last week.
No, I'll be doing that later today as well, actually.
Well, last week on the front cover, Thierry Henry being pulled down for a penalty, mm-hmm. That was front page news. Today you have to go, hang on, let me turn some pages. 5 pages in to find a mention of the referee. And the referee, or at least the mention of the referee in a bad sense from Chelsea's point of view, and it says there, Drogba asked the first of a series of penalties after he had fainted in the area. and yet, it takes 5 pages to say that, but it takes approximately 15 lines on the very first page to say it was a shame that Dani Alves had a tough red card and will miss the final. The same goes for Abidal.
Right, although, you know, he might use the Fletcher precedent to appeal that, because apparently UEFA are allowing United to put forward video evidence over the Darren Fletcher red card. We'll be talking about that a bit later on. But okay, so you had thousands lining the Las Ramblas and all that in Barcelona to celebrate this unexpected triumph, because I think at that point it was a fairly unexpected. Bottom line though, Sid, Dani Alves, Leo Messi, Barcelona, they weren't very good.
Well, they weren't very good, but I suppose what I'd throw back at you is, hang on a minute, this season, you know, I think there's a real risk, isn't there, with taking these two games as the measure of Barcelona. Now, obviously, there's also a risk of taking the Spanish season as a measure of Barcelona, because you could argue maybe the Spanish league's not that strong. But Manchester United didn't score in two matches against Villarreal. Is everybody saying Man United aren't any good because of that?
No, but they weren't crunch games, I think.
No, well, they weren't crunch games, but they were still denied the chance. There's plenty of league games this season. The reason Liverpool aren't going to win the league is because of a series of draws, nil-nils, including teams like Stoke and Hull and so on. Yes, it's true that Barcelona were not as good as I think everybody expected them to be. I include myself in that. I also have to hold up my hands and say that Dani Alves was awful. He really could not cross the ball to save his life. His crossing was awful. He only put in one decent cross in the entire game, and it led to a goal. I suppose I would say in Leo Messi's defence that a brilliant player, when he's faced by a defence like that, when he's got two or three players on him, is much, much harder. Of course it is. A side like Chelsea, as strong as Chelsea playing defensively, of course it's hard. And perhaps one thing I'd say in Leo Messi's defence is that in the 93rd minute, in a game when Barcelona were getting frustrated, when everyone was panicking, when they thought it wasn't going to happen, he got the ball in the penalty area, and instead of trying to run through trouble, had the coolness to look up and roll the ball to Iniesta. But that's not enough to say he's the best player in the world. Of course it's not.
But, Sid, a lot of people over here do seem to be basing their opinion on Barcelona on the strength of two games only. But the fact of the matter is, Messi never actually gave the ball away last night.
Well, I mean, I think this is the problem, isn't it? It's very, very difficult. And this is something that's been obviously very, very clear on the blogs, on the Guardian site. That I did lots of different opinions to this. And it is difficult, because if you make a judgment on these are the only two games Barcelona have seen, so people are saying, right, well, they're not very good. Now, obviously, there's an element of truth to that, in that they haven't come up against teams as good as Chelsea. But at this level of football, any team that plays extremely defensively is going to make it difficult for other people. And as you say, Messi didn't give the ball away, and Chelsea could argue that they were brave and they were very close, and yes, they were robbed by the referee, and I think last night there's probably not very much doubt about that, although I think the claim of four penalties is a pretty big exaggeration. But Barcelona couldn't, they legitimately claim, well, hang on a minute, Chelsea are saying that they were unlucky because they only conceded one goal over 180 minutes. So did we. It was an absolutely stunning goal out of nothing. Barcelona protected themselves by never losing the ball, by never giving it away, other than by having a strong defence. So it's very difficult to take a full judgment on
Sid,
this.
Can I open this out a bit, though? Let's look beyond last night's game. There is some evidence of a real phobia with Barcelona regarding English teams in the field. Last year against Man U, couldn't score against them in two games. Mm. I wouldn't think they fancy that much playing Manchester United. How do you see their mentality regarding the final?
Before we come on to the final, there is something I want to say here. You're saying Messi didn't give the ball away and that Barcelona didn't lose possession and stuff. They had possession for 70% of the game. Until the 92nd minute, they never once forced a save out of Petr Cech.
Yeah.
So what was happening to this possession all the time? For me, they did lose possession. They may not have misplaced passes, but what happened? Every time they got near the Chelsea goal, you expected them to unleash a shot or finally have a pop at goal. Mm. They would make that other pass. They'd put it out wide again, and then someone would tackle them. They'd lose possession.
I think there is an important point there, which is that there is sometimes an assumption or a criticism of Barcelona, which is there is an occasional lack of a plan B. And I think that certainly people watching at the bar, I was watching it in last night, and some of the Catalan media have said this morning as well, sometimes Barcelona need to bloody well shoot the ball. And last night, I think they were crying out for a player who could shoot from distance. They were crying out for, well, from a Spanish perspective, I mean, obviously, I'm sure there are better examples in England. They were crying out, for example, for a Wesley Sneijder, someone who could release a shot, force the other defence out, force them to come and get them. The thing is with this, I suppose, is that in the end, ultimately, the judgments are being made on the result and whatever else has happened. Barcelona are in the final. And as I say, it's, you know, up against a very, very defensive side. I think it's still worth giving Barcelona the benefit of the doubt. I think it's extremely... not a particularly convincing argument to say, but Barcelona haven't played anyone. They've played Bayern Munich and stuff them. Does that mean automatically Bayern Munich are rubbish? Well, what about the sides that English teams are stuff? Maybe Arsenal are rubbish. And the evidence of the English league this year is that maybe Arsenal aren't that good. So it's very, very difficult. And I don't think there is a definitive answer on that.
Back to this English thing, though, there is a phobia, isn't there? I mean,
You see, that's the thing. Barcelona, there is a series of very poor results, and I think that suggests something about the type of football that Barcelona struggle against. They're strong, powerful, well-organised, and I think in that sense, there's no doubt that Premier League teams are better than Spanish ones. They are physically stronger. They are better organised. They are better drilled. But I wouldn't call it a phobia, because the one thing you would say about Barcelona last night is they kept playing their way. They didn't lose the plot, apart from Dani Alves' crossing, which was dreadful. They didn't look fearful of Chelsea at any time. It's not like they thought, we can't play football, let's stop playing football. They kept on playing their way. So I think phobia is possibly the wrong word, but certainly, they've had very, very poor results against English teams, considering how good their results have been against everyone else. And I wrote this in The Guardian a couple of days ago. Mm. It's 6 years you have to go back to find a non-English team that's knocked them out. Chelsea have knocked them out, Man United have knocked them out, Liverpool have knocked them out. But you have to go back to a Juventus game in 2003, I think, for a non-English team to have knocked them out.
Yeah.
And that's certainly significant. However, Manchester United, there's a very, very, very strong feeling in Catalonia, which may turn out to be extremely wishful thinking, because I think United are more defensive than they realise. I think United are more defensive maybe than English commentators are prepared to admit sometimes, but they have a bit of everything. They believe that United are good for Barcelona in the final because United will play and let them play. They seem to have forgotten last year's semi-final.
Well, we'll look more at the final when it rolls a bit closer around, but of course already they're talking up the big Messi-Ronaldo clash, and if it's unfair to judge Barca and Messi on these two games, then we're certainly getting another big test of their talent.
I think as well, you know, I mean, I think Messi is probably quite aware of that. I think it would be unfair to say he's been awful in these two games. I think he knows that he hasn't performed at the level that he has been doing in Spain. I think he knows that he's got to produce it in a really, really big game. Although, so I don't think he was the worst player in the Barca side last night. I thought Samuel Eto'o was much, much worse. I thought Dani Alves was much, much worse. And I thought Xavi Hernandez and Sergio Busquets were not as good as I expected either of them to be as well. And the other thing, I suppose, is that, as you say, Barcelona are going to get to that final with their defence still in a terrible state with neither of their fullbacks available.
Mm, indeed. Indeed. Well, Sid, listen, thank you very much indeed for that. And lots of other things to talk about, but we ought to press on. So we'll catch up with you on Monday, if we may.
Yep, of course.
Thanks, Sid. Right, well, in a second or two, we'll have a quick nod to the Arsenal-Manchester United semi-final. Not quick enough for most Arsenal fans, though, possibly. And continue our look around the wide world of football as we head into the weekend. Now, Tuesday at the Emirates, Arsenal fans left feeling let down like Nicholas Bentner's trousers, if you've seen the rather unfortunate picture. How did Nicholas Bentner's trousers end up around his ankles? Does anyone know? As he was hauled from a nightclub at 4 a.m. after that defeat?
Well, his belt was open.
Right.
And he's a young, good-looking footballer in a West End nightclub, or a Chelsea nightclub.
Hmm.
I shudder to think how his trousers ended up around his ankles, but he probably had a pleasant evening.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did, and didn't think to do them up again before he was escorted to his vehicle. There you go. It was 11 men.
Why did he apologise, by the way, for going out after the game?
Well, maybe he felt it seemed insensitive to Gunners' pain everywhere for him to be out on the lash.
Surely the only way to get over that hammering was to go out in the lash for players and supporters alike.
But that doesn't protocol require you get smashed at home and don't get photographed, is that not the...
All right.
You'd rather see him behave like that than, say, do a Didier Drogba?
Well, I think Bentner behaved with a lot more dignity, being carried out of a nightclub with his trousers around his ankles. Yeah, right. Definitely.
This from Barry Glendening, of course. But anyway, Patrice Evra said it was 11 men against 11 children. We never doubted ourselves. Is that a fair reading of the Tuesday game?
Well, I keep on banging on this. But yes, I think it is. Man U, both legs, didn't put the emphasis on people at schools and gigs, got in strong, good players. I'm not talking about people who kick you, just generally dynamic. And I think Arsenal look a bit kind of lightweight, and you know, Man U prayed him that. And also, we're just far better.
Hmm. A lot of praise for Darren Fletcher, who took his desperately unfair red card with dignity and didn't play.
And the pedants will say, well, they got the man after the ball. And that's true. That can be fair if you go through somebody with both feet. But I think normally if you tackle somebody from the side, you're bound to make contact. I don't believe for a second that if you would have given that red card if he'd seen the incident and fully and seen a touch on the ball.
Is there any chance you think that now that UEFA have said that they can submit evidence that they might go back and... Or do you think that they're just playing along?
Well, it'd be nice if they got to play in the final, but you know, if they start allowing that one, then there's Abidal. But you open the door to endless protests, don't you?
Yeah. Do you think, Kevin, there might be part of UEFA's big anti-Scotland conspiracy?
they have so many conspiracies to organise.
I bet that bit gets edited out because they'll get to producer Jason, definitely.
Well, they might, yeah. Or maybe they just want me to. Pretenders, you wait. Maybe they've got to me.
Do you reckon they have a separate office to take charge of all these conspiracies? There must be very, very filing cabinet bulging, you know?
Separate dormant volcano. I actually scoured the rules of football last night, trying to get to the bottom of whether Fletcher's tackle was a foul or not.
Right.
Yeah. Because Graham Poole said in one of the papers yesterday that the referee was within his rights to send him off. And I couldn't find anywhere in the rules of football.
Well, Kevin was...
You just barge in and interrupt the point I'm trying to make.
I thought you just finished anywhere in the rules of football. So I was going to try and help.
I couldn't find anywhere in the rules of football what actually constitutes a legitimate tackle. So, which I thought was a bit odd. So it's probably open to referees' interpretation.
It's all this kind of guideline stuff to give referees beyond the rules. And there's rules and there's other documents around it. But I would have thought that, yes, if you do something reckless and endangers the opponent, touching the ball is no defence. But most tackles involve some contact at some stage with body against body. It's a physical game.
I think the key word is excessive, no?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you get the ball first. If you still have used excessive force, then it is
a foul. If you do a kung fu leap, you know, it doesn't matter whether you get the ball, you're going to get a red card. But that wasn't the case. I don't know how Fletcher could have challenged for that ball without the follow-through making some slight contact.
Now, Ronaldo, who came up with a pretty masterly performance. Zico's ball patch says, that Ronaldo free kick was hugely skillful, granted, but his skill is in having learnt to manipulate the flight of a dodgy ball. When we were kids, we rejected flyaway balls. Now they're used at the highest level because seeing the ball do weird things in flight is deemed exciting by whoever's in charge of this stuff. Discuss.
Was it Jens Lehmann who said on German telly this week that the balls actually accelerate in the air?
Against the laws of physics, that's marvelous.
Well, they might do, no?
No.
I don't.
It's not possible.
Why not? So.
No, friction, air friction, ball slowed by...
Well, yeah, but if you look at the dynamics of a ball, and I'm no scientist, but look, if you've got a ball here and you kick it here and you compress this side here, there's going to be an elastic effect. It's not just the moment of impact of your foot on that. There's also that bit where the convex has become concave and reassumes its position. There is that spring, no? When you kick that side of the ball in...
For the benefit of our listeners, I should probably point out that James has just drawn a circle with what looks like a nipple sticking out of it.
It does, it or a man's nose. What I'm saying is when you kick a ball that's been inflated, it's not just the impact, it's also the bit where that bit that's been indented springs out to assume its normal position, which gives it a thrust. And now my fist has leapt through the podcast air. Which gives it a thrust. So I can, Jens Lehmann, he's a goalkeeper.
But you don't think the time it gets 40 yards?
I'm not saying it's accelerating 40 yards, but at the start it might well be.
Well, yeah, because it's gone from nothing dormant to flying through the air. So it has to accelerate. I mean, I don't believe it was getting faster as it got towards Almunia.
All right, well, that might be a fair
point. But the other thing is, getting to this thing about the ball moving, all the more credit to Ronaldo. Most people can't control it if the ball moves that much. I mean, it's fantastic skill. Maybe I should know better. I was amazed to find out he scored 25 goals this season, despite his season starting. His first start was mid-September because of a surgery during the summer.
Indeed. Barry, Cristiano Ronaldo, applause. A magnificent performance.
Yeah, he was good.
Right. John Ashton.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Barry. Yeah, he was. So I just hope that it'd be great if he and Messi both turn up for the final and give us something that's quite memorable.
Mm, indeed, so. Well,
what are you suggesting? They might miss the bus or not be there.
Turn up in the football vernacular.
I tell you what, no, Ronaldo never misses an opportunity to go to Rome and score. If I recall correctly from... well, there you go. Meantime, Arsenal, as you were saying, Kevin, no points for fielding young teams. And, it was a harrowing night for many Gunners fans and for Arsene Wenger, who described it as the worst in his 25 years of management.
But that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, a lot of people have compared Arsenal's defeat, which was just car crash stuff, Danny Baker likened it to a slasher movie, but they likened it to the Ricky Hatton fight at the weekend. It just came out, bang, bang, fight over. And I suppose if to further use a boxing analogy, the Chelsea's defeat last night was probably like the frock fight the night before, or the week before, where he came back and won with 3 seconds left in the final round or whatever.
All right. Excellent.
Laboured analogies.
We don't
need Sean Ingle for those.
Moving on to the weekend, then Arsenal will be facing Chelsea, who, of course, they beat at Stamford Bridge. And Arshavin comes back into the side there. He's been involved in 11 goals, scoring 6, assisting 5, more than anybody else in the Premier League in that period. Foot Vantage 06 says Wenger should come out and admit that Arshavin has succeeded in less than 4 months, where Operation Youth has failed with 4 years of trying.
Yeah, cause you have to remember, last season Arsenal were in contention for the title for a large part of the campaign. This season they never have been. So I think maybe they are making progress, but it is very uneven. And you see Wenger's own anxieties in the FA Cup semi-final, where he leaves out Arshavin because he's worried about strength and brings in Van Persie instead. So I think he still knows there's further steps to be taken with that side, and how much money he has and how much he wants to spend will dictate the outcome.
And the feeling is that next year, as indeed Foot Vantage 06 points out, that the likes of City and Villa may well pose a bigger threat. Even Spurs, who knows, could do. But anyway, they're taking on Chelsea this week for what that's worth. It doesn't really make any difference to either side, apart from pride and the odd point or two. Well, Liverpool, meanwhile, will be at West Ham, looking to keep their slim championship hopes alive. And West Ham have won none of their 9 games against top 5 teams this season. Dirk Kuyt has been in top form. Yossi Benyoun, are Liverpool going to get the 3 points they need here, John?
It could work. West Ham have been playing really well, and Gianfranco Zola sure has got to be a decent contender for manager of the year. It could be. I've got a sort of sense, looking at the fixtures, that this could be the weekend that the title gets decided in Man United's favour. Simply because Liverpool, if they drop any points, it's over for me. And a draw at Upton Park, I think, might well be on the cards.
All right, 3 points the gap at the moment, but Manchester United have a game in hand. Manchester United, meanwhile, are facing the team that did the double over them last year. Manchester City, who do seem to have rediscovered some form of late, Robinho in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to that game. I just purely of sporting interest, I'd like Man City to defend half decently that day and see how it turned out, because they are playing some good stuff at the moment, but you look at the UEFA Cup game with Hamburg and Dunn getting himself sent off and crowd cheering him from the pitch. I mean, there's an unprofessionalism about the defence, and it's odd. You think that's one of the things you might be able to correct, whereas playing thrilling attacking football should be more difficult, but it's a defensive
side. Especially
for
Mark Hughes.
Yeah, it's a defensive side that City seem to find impossible. Mm. And, you know, well, it's all been said before, but Micah Richards, you know, since he was cast out of the England squad by Capello, it's been going backwards, hasn't it?
Mm. Indeed so. Well, we'll be looking at more Premier League stuff later on. Of course, there's all sorts of big games in the relegation battle, including that Newcastle-Middlesbrough game on Monday night. There's also the UEFA Cup second leg of the semi-finals coming up this evening, but we can't tell you too much about that. But reacting to it, Shakhtar against Dynamo, 1-1 from the first leg. And Hamburg now at home against Werder Bremen after their 1-0 win in Bremen in the first leg last week. We'll talk about that on Monday. Let's see what else. In Italy, huge match this weekend as Milan take on Juventus. It was 4-2 to Juventus in Turin. Juventus, though, coming into this game in a real mess after their dressing room bust-up at halftime of last weekend's match, and then Buffon coming out onto the pitch and moaning to the fans and saying he can't take it anymore, etc., etc., etc. Against Lecce, this, one of the powerhouses of Serie A. So, whereas Milan are in terrific form, Pippo Inzaghi's got 11 goals in his last 8 games. Hurrah for Super Pippo. While Alessandro Nesta apparently could retire. Many of us, of course, probably uncharitably felt he already had, but those back issues don't seem to be getting any better for Alessandro Nesta. Barry, no, I'll just move on.
No, I'm sorry, I'm just smiling because I'm just... We kind of think fondly of Pippo Inzaghi.
Yes. Where
he used to emote the same feelings in me years ago that Didier Drogba does now. Mm. But so maybe sometime in the future, you know, I'll be able to think about Didier Drogba and think, oh, wow, he was a great player, you know, and not just a complete tool.
Right. I wonder if Inzaghi had been presented with the two chances that Drogba had in Barcelona and Stamford Bridge, whether he would have buried at least one of them.
It's purely hypothetical, but you'd have to say yes, he would.
Yes. I mean, we'd like to think so. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, now...
You do realise, by the way, that the Chelsea supporters on the blog are going to have a field day with this. They're going to accuse us of being bitter and spiteful and jealous. And the fact is that we're not.
Right.
Chelsea have no class. They're a really unpleasant team. And
there are certain
that's
elements
why so many people are delighted they're gone out.
There are certain elements within the Chelsea team who certainly didn't lose well yesterday. And I think people have made the comparison with, say, Pep Guardiola, who, when his team were a goal down and heading out of the competition, still found the time and ease of mind to go over and give Gus Hiddink a kind of an arm around the shoulder, like crazy old game type moment. And applause to him for doing so. Hands up, though, and this is great podcasting. Hands up, who felt sorry for Chelsea when that goal went in? Everybody but Barry, Chelsea fans. He's the one you're after.
Really? Did you feel sorry for them?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. 90 seconds.
I was watching it at home with my flatmate.
Well yesterday.
And we just leapt out of our chairs. He took off his shirt and started waving it around his head. I was on my knees, fist clenched. And
what were you doing with your friend? You were on your knees with your friend.
Yeah. So we were that happy.
Right? So you're kind of ambivalent, is that what you're saying? You mixed feelings? Is so that
I was actually surprised at how pleased I was.
I was surprised at how sorry I felt for them.
Yeah, well, I don't understand why you felt sorry.
What a tremendous goal, by the way. What an incredible shot it was.
Which one? The
Iniesta. That was fantastic. That was really great.
Yeah. Well, Essien's was better, wasn't it? It was like Zidane all
over. Yeah, I mean, 93rd minute, you could have panicked. He hit it beautifully.
Let's get on to some posts then quickly before we finish part two. Not singing anymore with the origins of Scooby-Doo's name. Frankly, the pod does not believe your Scooby-Dooby-Doo business, although you did inspire Hey Habib to reply with an amazing link to a webpage of the Landover Baptist Church and their personal, their very own crusade against Scooby-Doo the cartoon. And it's fantastic. I urge you to go and look for it. It's www.landoverbaptist.org. They talk about the fact that Scooby-Doo is taken up as a kind of byword for a specific act of gay sex. And you really have to go to the website to see what it is, because I can't describe it here on the podcast. But anyway, magnificent stuff. Either the work of a master satirist, or there's some very, very, very disturbed people at the Landover Baptist Church. But that's just my opinion. Stilton, How did I miss the cheese? How do you pronounce? Is it meme? Where you have a theme type thing?
Mem.
Okay. How did I miss the cheese mem? And Stilton's got, his, you know, as his name implies, a bit of an affinity for cheese-based wordplay. He does a long post which features the sentences, I read Leicester are promoted. Manchester Derby this weekend, the Evans boys, Johnny and Cheddar, they related. Cheddar. And there's all sorts of things about mozzarella, Rocky Fort and Fort. But my response to that would be halloumi, old mate. Sweet cheeses. Good attempt. Shame you can't find a fitter use for your time. But nice to shoot the breeze anyway. With you. Sergeant Bilko, can we mention Whitley Bay's FA Vars final at Wembley on Sunday? They're playing Glossop North East. There you go. Well, good luck to them. They're managed, this is Whitley Bay, by Ian Chandler, who scored the winning goal when they won the trophy at Villa Park in 2002.
You're going to be accused of Glossop North East bias, or anti-Glossop North East bias now, because you haven't wished them luck. No, just I wish Whitley Bay.
Well, no. Made the best team win.
Somebody accused me on after Monday's pod of not being objective. So, you know, I hope both teams win. I hope it's a draw.
Right. Or that football's the winner.
Yeah. Yeah. Objectivity is what it's all about.
All right. Only one Wayne Biggins posts him with what could be a later winner than even Iniesta's at Stamford Bridge. He says, apologies, I've been on holes, etc. But I'm only now getting a chance to contribute to the deeper in the doo-doo chat. He suggests deeper in the doo-doo than Gareth Gates trying to say doodle. And he's got a laugh. He has got a laugh. So we'll have to wait till Shawnee's back to find out about who's getting what in the post. In a minute or two, we're going to be talking... Well, in a second or two, probably, we're going to be talking about Championship playoffs and the big relegation battles, etc. in the Premier League. So stick around. Okay, now, John Ashton, Championship playoffs, League playoffs? Tell us all.
League One and League Two playoffs.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, they're happening this weekend and stretching off into next week like a festival of lower league football.
Right.
We kick off this evening, actually, or Thursday evening for anybody listening on Friday.
Right, so you're losing us, John.
So I'm already gone, haven't I? The League Two ones start off tonight.
Okay, you've got Preston North End against Sheffield United, your team,
yes.
Full disclaimer. And then Burnley against Reading.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned on Monday, that all the teams going in there have got a chance. Burnley and Preston are the two form horses, despite finishing fifth and sixth. Sheffield United have only scored one goal from open play in their last five games. Reading have only won once at home since January. And Reading have got a huge... listeners there, I just flipped over my notepad to reveal another page of notes and Jimmo raised his eyes in horror.
Who's going to win, John?
My tip is Burnley, simply because they're the form team and they're a proper decent side as well. I think Sheffield United will probably account for Preston in the
Burnley
semis.
Burnley in the Premier League?
I think so, yeah. We saw Holland and Stoke going up last season, didn't we?
Burnley were well able for all the Premier League sides they took on in the FA Cup and League Cup this season.
He's made quite an impression though in Coyle, hasn't it, Burnley?
Yeah, he's done a really good job, bought really intelligently in the summer. Mm. He's got them playing a really nice, you know, they're not a big physical side particularly.
No, they've been quite good, nothing on TV.
Yeah.
Speaking of Leeds, certainly the Armageddon, Millwall, Leeds and the... in the League One playoffs. Some improvement with Leeds, though, with Simon Grayson taking over.
Yeah, they've done incredibly well. They've won 9 of the last 11, I think, going in there. I erroneously mentioned on the Monday podcast that away fans were banned from those games. They're not, in fact. They've got 1,000 away tickets each to go and enjoy. And Millwall have been really sort of inconsistent. I think their last 8, they've won, lost, won, lost, won, lost, won, lost. And so you'd sort of fancy Leeds, you know, to certainly make the final.
In the Premier League, anything else on the various... No?
Let's mention Rochdale, because I don't get enough mentions around the place. They're 35 years in the bottom tier, in the playoffs again for the second season running.
Oh.
Chance of getting out for the first time since 1974.
My word.
Which would be good.
Very good. Okay, now, the Premier League, probably the key game, apart from the ones we've already discussed, the Manchester Derby et al., is the Monday night clash between Newcastle United and Middlesbrough. Neither side have managed to score a single goal in any of their last three games. Newcastle haven't won. They've had one win in the last 17. And I think at Liverpool...
I can hardly wait. That's where I'm going on Monday.
You're going there.
You really made me so excited by telling me that.
They've had no wins in 10. And... It doesn't seem like Alan Shearer has had much impact there.
They were abysmal at Liverpool. I don't blame them for losing at Liverpool, but just kind of, they were just so passive apart from the opening 10 minutes. And there's no pace in the team, and therefore, if you get no pace, how do you have a go at the opposition? And the answer is apparently you don't. And I wonder about Middlesbrough and Newcastle, whether they're actually just fighting over which order they go down into the championship. It depends really on whether Hull can somehow win a game somewhere. They came close to equalising Aston Villa on Monday.
Mm. Lost Transportation says that he went and did some research on the liability of the various player contracts at Newcastle. If it's true they don't have relegation clauses inserted into the contracts, it's going to be extremely hard for them to shift players on large wages. Barton, for example, sitting on a contract worth in excess of £9 million. Richie McCauley, on a related note, says, I wonder if, when factoring in inflation over time, exchange rates and all that other financial palaver, Newcastle this season is the most underachieving team in football history with regard to players' wages, signings and that. Or sporting history, he asks.
I don't know. Hmm? It might well be.
And you think they began the season by drawing at Old Trafford?
Yeah.
Weird. Indeed.
Fuller for longer. Excuse me if I'm butting in and changing the subject. Why does no one on the pod think that Hull will get relegated? They're only 3 points ahead of Newcastle and Middlesbrough. They already have a worse goal difference than Newcastle. And as we all know, are in free fall. Their remaining fixtures are Stoke, Bolton, Stoke at home, Bolton away, and then Manchester United at home. Barry.
Well, the reason I don't think they'll get relegated is because I can't see... I think if any team manages to get out of the bottom three at the moment, they will be replaced by Sunderland.
Right. Okay, Sunderland are taking on Bolton. They're away at Bolton. They've only scored 4 goals in 10 games. And it does seem that Ricky Spradger has run out of ideas there.
Well, he's run out of ideas. The players have thrown in the towel and hoisted the white flag. And the only thing I can see keeping them up is the rubbishness of the three teams or in the relegation zone at the moment.
Do you think Hull might beat Stoke at home, though? That's, and 3 points might be enough.
Yeah, that's why I think Hull will stay up, because of that game against Stoke on Saturday. And they did end on Monday night. There was a real sort of cup tie, sort of have a go.
I must give them credit. I mean, they didn't lie down at Villa. They showed, you know, there's this whole thing about, oh, the team fell apart when that half-time tirade was conducted on the pitch. You know, what is that against again?
Manchester City.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't really believe that. It's nonsense. I don't think players are going to stop trying and get relegated because they're in a huff about the manager for months on end, you know.
No, but given that how much of Hull's success was put down in the first half of the season when they got 20 points from their first nine games, it was down to the fact that Phil Brown had encouraged a happy, carefree atmosphere among the Tigers, that from that moment on, did the players not feel, and I mean, various ex-players have expressed themselves on this, that if they'd ever had a manager do that, they would just feel that he completely betrayed the trust by exposing them in that way to that kind of public humiliation.
Well, that's very infantile, though, isn't it? But I felt maybe there's a natural parabola. You get promoted and sometimes you go off to a flyer and it carries you for a lot along on the euphoria and this, the general excitement, and then that fades. And also other teams work you out. I think Stoke at home are a really tough prospect to play against. But there's West Ham went there and won last week. As time goes on, the initial impetus drops.
Fair points, Kevin, fair points. Europa League, relevant battles there. Everton taking on Spurs, Fulham against Aston Villa. So there you go. Of course, Man City also in the mix for that, as are West Ham, who we mentioned before, at home to Liverpool. But I think that's pretty much it. We could talk about the Mexican footballer who's been banned for spitting and blowing nasal secretions at an opponent and then telling him he had swine flu. Did you see this? Guadalajara defender Hector Reynosa. Provisionally been suspended from all matches in the Copa Libertadores. Good Lord. Following last week's at Everton of Chile in South America's top club competition, in around the 90th minute of the aforementioned game, Reynosa, following an incident in the game, reacted by spitting at the Chile player Sebastian Penco and then released nasal secretions at the face of the player. Wow.
So has he been suspended for doing that or for doing that and saying he had swine flu?
This situation, lamentable in its own right, was aggravated by the risk of a possible infection of the disease H1N1, better known by its epithet of swine flu.
But he can still look at Didier Drogba and hold his head high.
Well, indeed. There you go. I tell you what, it's a wide world of football, and that's our little glimpse, our little window on it all for Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks for all your posts. And we'll be back on Monday. In the meantime, thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
John Ashdown, Barry Glendinning. And thanks, producer Jason and Ben. And we'll be back on Monday. Have a lovely weekend, everybody. Oh, I'm doing a paper review later on, if you want, on the video thing. Cheers. Cheerio then.